Hello and welcome to the Body Electric Podcast. My name is Nathan Hiltz, I'm your host, and today is episode 37. My special guest is a wonderful guitarist named Brian Katz. Brian Katz is really hard to describe. He does a lot of things very well, from jazz to classical to improvised music. He's a composer, and he's a very passionate educator, and overall just has a wonderful energy. I really admire him and his playing, and really look to him as sort of a model of what you can do when you work hard and you have a kind of openness. So anyway, I really hope you enjoy this episode. Please check out my website, nathanhiltz.com, for upcoming performances. And I hope you're all having a wonderful start to the summer. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Good to see you, Nathan.
Yeah, good to see you, man. Yeah. Thank you so much for doing this.
Pleasure. Thank you for doing it.
Yeah, and thank you for joining me at Grace Church on the Hill. It's nice to, you know, be in this space. First time me doing a podcast here.
Oh,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Cool, man. So how's your summer been going?
It's really been opening up, the classic phrase, you know. I suddenly have, like, you know, 7 to 10 gigs a day, which is
great.
Which is really, really nice. And just fresh off year of teaching at York and U of T, and it's been a crazy few years.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
So it's really kind of nice to have that behind me for the moment.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool moment, eh? Nice to have your freedom, I'm sure.
And absolutely.
Nice to be just a musician. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Great. Yeah. Well, I'm so excited to talk to you about this. I mean, you've had such a really interesting career on the guitar, and I've encountered you over the years and seen you play, and you know, so you know, I'm interested to kind of, the first thing I usually like to ask people is, where did you start with the guitar? Like, was it guitar first or was it piano first?
Yeah, guitar was first, around the age of 9, and I saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, and I said to my parents, I want to be a Beatle when I grow up.
Nice.
And it was a guitar because of that association, and I studied the conservatory. That was my, you know, first encounter. But all along, even from that time, I was improvising and picking up tunes by ear, and even starting to fuss with classical music. And
okay.
I remember my first recital. Actually, I was playing a little classical ditty, and I just instinctually started to improvise on it. I remember the audience laughing. In an affectionate kind of way, but I didn't really know it was happening because I was adding stuff.
Yeah.
And there began a whole career of improvisation.
Oh, that's great. And so you at that young age, did you have teachers that supported that sort of that approach to guitar?
I had a few. I would say mostly not. Mostly not, you know. I was just kind of getting into it a little bit here and there, but when I started to get more serious about it, it was kind of like, why do you want to do that? And that happened for me also. I began the cello when I was about 12, and I started improvising in the classroom in our junior high. I started improvising on, you know, string material, and the teacher was like, why are you doing that?
Yeah. I feel like guitar, you might be able to get a pass, because there is some history of guys doing that on guitar, right? But cello, I'm sure,
that's right. Different. That's right. Very different culture. And on my own accord, I actually began to study theory at 14, which is pretty unusual for, like, you know, 14-year-old to say to her parents, I want to study theory. But I was really interested in the mechanics of music and how it all kind of fits together. And unfortunately, I had another bad experience with that, because I started to get a little bit interested in jazz. There was a station that came through from Buffalo. It was like it barely came through. But I just caught a whiff of jazz, and it was like, man, this is really, really cool. My mother would go to my room and say, like, what are you listening to? What are you doing? So I became jazz curious. So I went to this theory teacher, and I was learning classical harmony and stuff, and great. I was interested in that as well. And I said, you know, I'm really interested in jazz. And I won't mention his name. he said to me, why would you want to spend time with jazz? It's just the cycle of fifths, and that's it.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But
So where did you get start getting your jazz theory fixed? Like at that time, obviously no internet was happening, right?
Yeah, there was a lot of guitar players studying with Hank Moniz, really wonderful teacher, and you know, a number of people said go study with Hank, and I did, and we did like the Berkeley books, pretty straight ahead. And he was a wonderful teacher, and we worked a lot on technique and scales all over the neck. It took me a while to discover that he wasn't really a jazz player. He was a studio player, very competent in a lot of styles, but certainly not a person with his own voice. And that's cool, but he wasn't really, really a jazz player. And I found that out when I really had the opportunity to meet my first professional jazz musician, who was Fred Stone, who is an amazing musician who I was just very, very fortunate to come in contact with. I think one of the great great moments of my life really was meeting him. And how I met him, he came into my high school to do a workshop on improvisation. Free improvisation. He had just finished touring with Duke Ellington for I think 2.5 years, and our teacher said, yeah, this guy, you know, played with Duke Ellington. Of course I knew who Duke Ellington was, and he's going to give like this workshop in improvisation. And we were all together, and we were told to bring our instruments, and he said, anybody want to play, you know? And at some point, you know, I put up my hand and I said, what are we going to do? He said, have you improvised? I said, yeah, I flew around. You know, I did that in my bedroom all the time. It was just we're just going to make something up. And I was sweating because I knew this guy's a famous guy. And
so he just wanted to go?
He just wanted to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
The whole thing was about free improvisation.
Wow. Great.
And so we played, and I don't know what we played, but I was intensely concentrated. And at the end of it, he said, that was great, man. You know, I said, oh, thank you, but I don't know what I'm doing. And he said, yes, you do.
Whoa.
And that left an impression.
Yeah.
Really, my whole life, there was like this acknowledgement that all these hours that I've fooling around in my bedroom improvising. This was not playing on changes. This is like making stuff up mostly. And it's like, here's a guy who does this for a living. So as the story turns out, I was jogging at that time, like as a practice, but I was having a hard time like fitting in. I said, I'm going to get a Globe and Mail paper route, and I'm going to you know, like deliver papers and jog and like do this whole thing. It'll get me up in the morning because I have to deliver papers in the morning. So I did that, and I didn't go collecting very often. I could have used the money, but I was more interested in like the discipline and the exercise. But eventually I go collecting and knock on this dude's door. Who is it? It's Fred Stone.
Oh, no way. He lives here.
Yeah.
No way.
It's like he lived in my neighborhood. I didn't even know that.
Whoa.
So complete fluke. He goes, wow, it's you. And he invited me in.
Yeah.
And that changed my life. And I ended up, like, I was never a formal student of his, but I was under his mentorship. And I ended up playing at George's with him, with Claude Ranger and a whole bunch of people. Yeah. Like, I was the youngest guy. I was... You know, I was 18, 19.
Oh, yeah.
Doing free improvisation with these famous jazz dudes. I was sweating buckets.
Yeah.
But, like, I got, you know, initiation by fire.
Wow.
And ended up having, you know, a close musical and friendship, you know, with him for many years. He died quite some years ago now. So that was the...
It's so wonderful how it's passed on, you know? It's so interesting. It just... From person to person, what a wonderful thing, you know.
Yeah, it's really you know, I just feel very fortunate, and that's very much a place I've never left. And I would say in the last 10 years, I'm saying great part inspired by teaching in this open improvisation program at York University, and now inducting a whole new generation of students into this. This is like I would say the most exciting thing for me musically is to go on stage and to make up music, to make up compositions.
Yeah, very interesting. So so you were starting to gig at quite a young age, and but then you did go for kind of a more formal route and really study the classical thing. When did that kind of come about?
I was studying classical guitar in my teens with Norbert Kraft, and then later with Ellie Kasner. And at the same time, I was studying jazz. So I was playing nylon string guitar, and I was playing electric guitar, and I went to Humber.
Right.
Okay. And I did that, and then I went to York, and then some years in between, and then eventually I did 2 degrees in education at U of T in Noisy.
Right.
So I was doing both things, and I was playing with a pick and doing the electric, and the real turning point for me was going to study with Ralph Towner when I was 25, and I went to New York to study with him. And when I played for him, well, the first thing he said, actually, I've got a great story that it might be interesting to. I played something for him. I played him some of my music, and he said, "Hey, I could tell who you've been listening to." So nice. Like, but in context of what I was just saying, he said to me, "You know, you sound great. I got to tell you, you still sound like an electric guitar player." You know, like I hadn't fully crossed over.
Yeah.
And those lessons with him were really about, like, it's fine if you want to keep playing electric guitar and stuff. This is not what I do. He would say, you know, he wanted to show me more about, like, applying improvisation and jazz ideas to the classical guitar. And through my work with him, it really became that much clearer to me that really is a different instrument. And I eventually left the electric guitar. I still play it sometimes. I love it. I play it at weddings and, you know, da-da-da-da. But for many years now, I would say it's not my instrument.
Right.
You know. But you know what? I want to play for you and your listeners one of the things that I played for Ralph Towner that's not mine, but something that I took off a record of his. And that was like, that was a job.
Okay, let's hear it.
That was a job.
Absolutely.
And I'm just going to kind of reconstruct it. It won't be for note anymore. It's too many years ago.
All right.
But this is the kind of thing that was really intriguing my ear. Thank you. had something like that, and you know, I listened to that recording, early trio record with him and Glenn Moore and Colin Wolcott, I think, and I was just like so intrigued by those harmonies, and for me it brought together like a lot of what I loved in classical music and new music, and
yeah,
lush jazz harmonies, right. You know.
Yeah, at the same time it's somehow guitaristic too. There's something absolutely reminiscent of Leo Brower or something there. Like, I guess just when you see some parallel motion or things that, you know, will go across the strings, like pattern-based things that ignore that third or whatever.
Absolutely.
Very cool.
Yeah. And I said to him, I said, I really like this piece.
Right.
And he kind of laughed in a very affectionate kind of way. He said, oh, I'm glad you like that. I improvised that in the studio.
No way.
So that was like,
how could he possibly improvise that? That's crazy. Yeah.
Well, he's a great open or free improviser. You know, and that got me into that whole world of thinking more compositionally with improvisation.
Mm.
Like making it a piece, and this kind of metacognitive kind of thinking where you're in the moment, but you're also thinking about what you just did maybe a minute and a half ago, so you can recapitulate.
Mm.
So it's such an exciting way to play. And the other person beyond Fred Stone and Ralph that really got me into that was Casey Sokol, a wonderful improviser and pianist who began that whole program of open improvisation many years ago.
Mm, interesting. Yeah. Well, let's play something together, and then I'd love to talk about how you teach people to improvise in that way.
Okay. Cool.
So what do you feel like playing?
Well, why don't we do this this piece, Circling? I'll prelude it with Leaves Will Speak.
Okay.
The first part's got some baroque-ish influence, absolutely, and the second part is just a nice cycle of chords to improvise on, thus Circling.
Okay, all right. Thank you. tune. All right, that feels good. Feels natural. Yeah, very nice. Yeah. All right. So yeah. So how do you communicate this type of this approach to playing? I mean, what I get scared when I play free. I think I did it a bit when I was younger, but now like I rely on chord changes. You know. So I'm interested to know, like, when did you really feel like you were developing well? Like
most things, of course, it's, you know, it's a process. And I think one of the things is to, you know, to differentiate fooling around or give it a little bit more license. You know, or even noodling, which is beautiful. You know, it's playful, but sometimes maybe we're not honoring the art of free, or what I like to call open improvisation, enough by saying it's just fooling around. Fooling around's fun, and noodling's fun. You know, I gave a workshop a few years ago at the Ontario Music Educators Association. I'd say it was around like from noodling to composition,
right?
And the whole idea was, with improvisation, we need to honor it, just like anything else. So, what I was trying to let the teachers know at this workshop is, when you see your guitar students or whatever they're playing, so-called fooling around, take an oral snapshot of that. Take a reading on that, because that stuff is really important to those players when they're doing it, and to build on that. That's the music that's going on in their brain.
Mm-hmm.
And to encourage to practice that and to formulate it. So the first thing I would say, you know, is honoring it. Mm-hmm. Maybe change what we call it.
So it's a certain attitude.
An attitude.
And the language that we use to understand what it is that we're actually doing. So it becomes workable in a way?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Right on.
Right.
And to recognize the part of the practice of it is, in fact, literally the practice of it. You need to pick up your instrument and improvise, and you're going to get better at it. Obviously, mm-hmm. there's a lot more to it than that. When you're improvising, you really, you can bring to, it's an opportunity to bring together what's going on, first and foremost, I would say, in your musical mind. So, you know, mm-hmm. if I pick up my instrument, you know, one day I might, oh, I'm in that thing. But maybe another day, whatever, you know, like mm-hmm. a different kind of style. And then to, like, you know, to go with that. So I think the practice is like so essential, that you actually improvise and that you honor the tradition. And then it's really about, I think, pulling apart a style that you're familiar with, and to learn to become more compositional with it, to find ways of formulating the music while it's going on in real time. So if I'm, say, in more Baroque kind of mood, I have to pull out everything that I understand about Baroque music,
mm-hmm.
and to start to play with that. So perhaps somebody who's just a beginner, maybe it's a little line like that, and then, you know, develop the line. So you're really using any of the compositional techniques, but doing it spontaneously.
Mm. And you're still engaging with traditions. Like, sometimes when we think about free improvisation, we think, oh, we're escaping all traditions and going into some other more pure music or something. But you really are still doing analysis of musical traditions, and then creating an understanding, and then using that as a device to improvise, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up, because sometimes, particularly young students, get really obsessed about, like, you know, I want to be original. I don't want to be listened to anything else. But like, it's pretty hard to escape a tradition.
Yeah.
I mean, there's very few people that actually have broken through traditions like Stravinsky did, Debussy did.
And they all mastered the tradition first.
And they all,
the previous iteration or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah. Debussy was completely schooled in formal counterpoint, et cetera, et cetera. So, it's so important to, to embrace tradition. And I think that's part of the craft of open improvisation is that you learn to discipline your mind. And if you're going in a certain direction, stay in that direction. In fact, in our program at York, we say in the first few years, because people can study this for 4 years there, we say, try to limit your improvisations to around like 3 minutes. Okay? Because at a certain point, when your ear instrument connection gets good, it's not that difficult to play what's in your head. But what becomes more challenging, teachers actually never say anything's difficult, what becomes more challenging is to make it into something coherent, to make it into something that has a particular kind of flow to it. It's not about like the first thing that comes into your head you play all the time. And that's where things get very interesting because on the one hand, you want to be in the moment. On the other hand, you want to watch over that moment a little bit, right? Like I noticed in that Ralph Towner thing, like a minute into the improvisation, he went back to that opening lick.
Yeah.
So part of his brain, for sure, is like thinking about what he did, a minute ago. So that art of being in the moment yet overseeing the whole structure of it.
Mm. Interesting. That's very interesting. Yeah. So what about harmony? Like, that Ralph Towner really evoked like 20th century harmony for me. Like, I mean, how would you possibly engage with that kind of harmony when you improvise? Like, how do you learn that? I mean, like, the jazz seems so straightforward, but with, all this crazy 20th century stuff, like, how do you get there on guitar without becoming some kind of patternistic person? Does that make any sense?
It makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I would just argue with you just in terms of like the jazz being so straightforward, because to somebody who wasn't acculturated in that,
right,
it would not be straightforward.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like me trying to understand Chinese. I don't know when the sentences begin and when they end. And that's, we know as jazz musicians, that's how it is for a lot of people. So I would say, when you're in it and you're listening to a lot of that music, it's probably going to start manifesting it. I mean, if you like it, it's really, you have to really, resonate with something. So I would say somebody who has a lot of 20th century kind of harmonic vocabulary, they are going to lean, they're going to lean that way.
So would you do harmonic analysis of a 20th century piece when you were learning it?
I think to be a good improviser in that style, you would have to look, pretty carefully at at some of the moves, some of the archetypal moves, for sure, certain composers. Having said that, it's just amazing how much people can pick up by ear if we let them.
Yeah,
like we know that as jazz musicians,
like the intuitive.
Oh yeah,
thing. Yeah, of course.
Like
yeah.
we know like. People, Louis Armstrong, didn't read music, wasn't part. We know he had great ears, and our ears are greatest assets. So, and if we had the opportunity to witness Beethoven or Bach or Handel improvising, we'd go wow, for sure, because we know there's accounts of Beethoven's improvising, and we can only imagine how fantastic it was.
Oh man. Wouldn't it be great if we ever get time travel? Hopefully we can.
Yeah,
can hear that. You know.
Yeah,
it's great, man.
Yeah. So I think you bring everything. This has helped to keep me sane as a musician because I work a lot as an improviser and as a composer. I think those are like, I happen to be a guitarist primarily. I'm also a pianist, but I primarily this is my instrument. But I feel like the main thing that I really do is improvise and compose, and they're married, those two things. I happen to do them on this instrument, but if I would have stayed with the cello, I would have done it, you know, on the cello.
I think composition really, you kind of write what maybe you want to be sometimes, or it helps you to work out what you want to do, you know?
Nathan, yeah. You're so right on. The next thing I was just going to say, you know, yeah. this has really helped me, like, yeah. as a person who's interested in a lot of things,
yeah.
you know, I ask myself over the years, like, how am I going to live, like, loving classical music and a lot of traditions around it, classic romantic and new music, and loving jazz, and I have a lifelong love of harmony. I mean, you know, I was raised on Richard Rodgers tunes and all, you know, all those show tunes, and I mean, it's just so in my, you know, I don't think I'm ever going to be a non-harmonic player, but how, you know, I would ask myself for many years, like, how am I going to bring that all together? And then at some point I realized, well, I am bringing it together as a composer and as an improviser. I get a chance to live my various lives, hopefully through unity and one life. You know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's interesting. What's a better hang, the classical hang or the jazz hang?
it's
a good question.
Well, I'd say just, you know, like, just the joy that I just experienced just improvising that tune with you, circling, and just, you know, like, yeah. there's something about making music together in the moment, be it jazz or be it open free improvisation or Baroque improvisation. You know, there's something about the moment that's just undeniably delicious.
Yeah, it's a good way to spend our time.
Yeah.
Well, let's play a jazz tune.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I'm just going to tune up.
Yeah, yeah.
I can hear.
Yeah, do you want a tuner?
I'll just give me your eight.
Thank you.
fun.
That was really fun. Oh my gosh. Yeah, man. Oh, you're such a beautiful player, man.
Oh, you too, man.
Yeah, really. Thank you.
It's a joy.
Yeah. So, tell me about Delcroix's Eurythmics.
Oh, Eurythmics.
I know a tiny bit about it. And I know, like, with my young students, I love getting them to stand up. And I love getting them to, like, stamp their feet to the rhythm. So I'd be very interested to know if you're into how you're into that and what you might say about it at a more advanced level as well. I'd be interested to maybe experience that myself, you know?
Okay, cool. Well, it's definitely, the word experience is key, but just a little window into it. Jacques Delcroix was a Swiss music educator and composer and theorist, and probably the first person in music education in the West to really articulate, like, formally the relationship between learning music and physical movement.
Mm.
So if you just think of our first instrument, not the first guitar we got, but our first instrument, the body, the first and only body we got, that is our instrument.
Mm.
And if you think about the genesis of rhythm, everybody in the music education world says rhythm's the most important thing.
Sure.
Where does rhythm come from? It comes from our body.
Mm.
It comes from movement. It comes from the heartbeat, right? So we are infused with rhythm naturally. That's not to say that we can't get better at it,
right?
It's natural,
yet
we have to work it. And it's interestingly enough, while most music educators agree that rhythm is like the foundation and everything, it's the least spoken about in terms of music education textbooks and stuff, right?
Mm.
Because you can't really get it from words. You can get timing, you can get concepts. So if you understand, you know, 3/4 is three beats to the bar, quarter note gets a beat. But what does that really mean? When you begin to do like a conducting gesture or walk in three, one, two, three, put more emphasis on the one,
right,
and put less emphasis on the three, for example, you start to understand the shape of the rhythm, not just the intellectual idea of timing.
Mm.
So Delcroix is really concerned that you understand rhythm experientially in your body, not the about part. In fact, music education in general is not really the about. It's really, the about is like adjunct knowledge, but actual, the deeper knowledge is really what we do as musicians. We music, right?
Mm.
It's a verb, right?
Yeah.
You can read everything about chord and scales and everything, but until you can like music it, until you can do it, it really doesn't mean anything. So the idea is to train the body in a very rhythmic kind of way because the body's already rhythmic. So let's use the body to do it. So if we're learning, for example, you know what? I'm going to give a little example here, like in a jazz context, because I hope I won't. Hope the microphone will stay standing.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we'll be good.
Okay.
So if I was teaching, you said like an advanced thing, but I would do this with kids as well. But let's say you wanted to get the idea across of swing rhythm, which is often, you know, exhibited with a ride symbol. Now, if I was to write that out, as you know, it looks pretty complex with all those triplets and everything, right? Mm. Couldn't expect, like, say, you know, junior high school kids to read that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Can be really challenging. If I'm working with young kids and I want them to get like the idea of like swing rhythm, I would say like walk, skip, then 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 walk.
Mm.
So, and then I can get them maybe to clap on 2 and 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3. So what's happening there? I'm doing it with my hands right there. And scatting along. And they're having like a very whole body kind of experience. Because they have the rhythmic foundation like in their body.
Yeah.
And then they're working you know, with the pitches.
It sounds like another way to access the present moment too.
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. That's really heavy.
Yeah, it's a very integrative approach. It's a big world, you know. That's like a, kind of a whole other interview. But since you asked,
And
Delcros was very, what attracted me to it was also that Delcros was really big on honoring improvisation. That improvisation is like the pathway to becoming a better musician.
Oh, that's good to hear. That's good to know. Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Yeah.
Using the materials of music spontaneously, right? When I've been selling improvisation programs to schools over the years, including junior highs and high schools, because I taught those levels as well, and I'd be sitting like in a principal's office and principal would say, I don't know anything about improvisation. I never improvise. I said, you know, think about what we're doing right now. We're manipulating phrases of words that we've used before, but we're going to use them in a new kind of way. Maybe not so new. Maybe once in a while it's going to come out a little bit different rhythmically. Mm. We're actually stringing together ideas that we know in different ways all the time. We're improvising.
Yeah, totally.
So, so we're living the language. But why don't we do that with music, except in certain traditions? Many traditions, mind you, but many traditions, particularly the Western art canon, just kind of denounce, like what happened to me as a kid and as a teenager. It was like I was not encouraged until I met Fred Stone. I was not encouraged to improvise. Mm. What's that all about? That's like Eurocentricism. That's elitism.
Yeah.
That's like divorcing what actually happened amongst musicians from this kind of so-called European aesthetic, distance kind of experience. Mm.
And do you think things are better now? Like, I feel like people are a little bit more open nowadays, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's really...
Like even John Williams says that you got to improvise to be a better guitar player, right?
Beautiful.
Yeah.
No, it's really exciting. We're really fortunate as guitarists because we grew up with, like you were pointing to earlier, with a tradition of... You know, improvising, noodling, you know, like guitar players do that. Part of it is like, you know, we have it in our lap. It's like friend. It's a very intimate relationship. But for many instruments, like many violinists, I work with people at the Faculty of Music, teaching improvisation to, mostly classically trained people. So these are people, you know, playing at a very high level of musicianship.
Yeah.
But they can't sit down at their instrument and make up a tune. It's like something, you know. Yeah. So,
oh, it's so interesting, man. You really do embody both things. Like, it's really wonderful that you can do the straight ahead traditional classical music, but also are so open to the free improvisation and jazz. Like, that's really great, you know. Yeah,
it's cool. It's fun to be
at a time when people weren't doing that as much, you know.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. I enjoy being part of different worlds, and sometimes I think it's more like almost like acting in some ways. I'm sure you probably think about that sometimes too. Like you're playing a certain gig. Like I saw you out on that gig last night. Like a few nights ago, right?
Yeah.
You saw me at the Klezmer thing, and I saw you
country
thing, and you played it so beautifully. And I'm sure you get into a different headspace.
Oh, yeah. I love putting on an overdrive pedal and just sort of seeing what that does to me, you know.
It's cool. Nice.
Yeah, man. Oh, well, so let us know where you're performing. Like, what's up next for you?
What do I have?
And let us know what your website is so people can look at that.
BrianKatz.com. And I've got a few klezmer gigs coming up, and I haven't booked anything with I'm playing at the Free Times Cafe, I think, on June 19th with John Lightstone, who you heard me with.
Okay.
So that's been a big part of my path, the Jewish music thing.
Great. Man, music's so deep. So deep. So many traditions. Like, the klezmer could be a lifetime of music, right?
Yeah, there's so much. And sometimes, since we're talking about education, one of the things that I often say to my students, they remind me of me, a lot of them, particularly the ones at York, because York is not such a streamlined program. You can take a little bit of this, a little bit of that. So I have some people studying classical with me and jazz and open improvisation. Mm. And, you know, they're 20, 21, like, I don't know what to do. Like, and I'll say to them, you know, it's a process, but ask yourself, what do you really love? And like, not just like, what do you like? You know, like you go to a movie, you say, I really like that movie. No, that's not good enough. Mm. Like what would you die? Like, you know, the desert island thing. Mm. What music? Like, why are you a musician? What brought you to this place where you want to do that? You want to do this crazy thing as a career, you know? And I said, that's what you need to keep on looking at that. Mm-hmm. And keep on reevaluating that, you know, and find a way to bring your loves together. You can't do everything. You can't be great at everything. It's not going to work. But you can find ways to meld different things, you know, together.
Mm. Guided by love. I love it. I dig it. Nice. Well, let's play one more tune and call it a day. Okay. This has been a blast. Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, you want to try this? This is an old song of mine. I wrote in old Montreal.
Yeah.
Called Montreal Folk Song.
I have a brisket in the oven right now as we speak. Back at home.
I've
been up smoking it since about 7 a.m.
Wow.
And finish it off in the oven, you know?
So, wow. Cool.
It's Montreal.
Okay. You're from down east, right?
I am. Yeah, Halifax.
Halifax, yeah. Nice town.
Yeah, yeah.
So, should I play the head?
Sure, go for it.
Or we'll sort of do it together.
Whatever. Sure, sure.
Okay. Let's see.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Oh, pleasure. Lovely to be here.
You know, one thing I just wanted to say before we finish is, you know, when I was just about 18, 19 years old, I was playing at a bar on Queen Street, you know, and at that time I was, you know, I was obsessed with Lenny Bro, and I was just playing Lenny Bro transcriptions, basically, just like playing his tunes and copying his solos, and you walked in, you know? And you came up to me after the tune. And you said, "Oh man, you sound like Lenny, you know, Lenny Bro, you know, like you're doing the Lenny thing." And you're like, "I heard, I knew him, like I heard him, you know." And you know, for me, that really, that felt so good. Like you're the first person in the world, you know, that said, you know, noticed that. You know, like, you know, I had a tape of Lenny Bro back in Halifax that a girlfriend's father gave to me, and you know, and to be in Toronto, like the big, just new to the big city. And for someone to hear that, that was hugely affirming for me, you know? Wow. So, and I've never forgotten that.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for giving that to me. Yeah, yeah. It's cool.
And Lenny, you know, just... actually, I was thinking before I got here, I said, you know, I was thinking, you know, I hope Lenny comes into the conversation. And, and here it is, because I just followed him around like crazy. And I... You know, I think about the Toronto jazz guitar scene, and you know, with Lenny and Ed, and this is really like one of the most beautiful jazz guitar cultures in the world. Like, I've traveled quite a bit. I've spent a lot of time in Europe, and like, especially harmonically, because of the influence and touch wise. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think there's a jazz guitar person with any level of sensitivity that has not been touched by those two gentlemen, and you know, and other people as well.
Sonny Greenwich, I think.
Sonny, you know, beautiful, and but that, you know, it's just Toronto jazz guitar is infused, you know, is infused with that. I'd say Canadian and beyond Canada, obviously.
Yeah. I wonder why it is. I wonder what it is about this place.
Well, you know, just like. You know, those three that we just mentioned, you know, Lenny and Ed and Sonny, just so exceptional.
Yeah.
Just, and, you know.
Must be some energy here, you know, something.
Yeah, we're very blessed. I mean, I know I would not, you know, without hearing those people, I mean, it's just goes so deep, you know.
Yeah.
When you catch on to that sound, it's like.
Absolutely.
Anyhow, thanks for sharing that.
All right. Thanks, man. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too.